Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Split right is DeAndre Moore. Tight end is Gunnar Helm on second down. Handoff Weisner. Rittner pulling it back in is Manning. Arch breaks a tackle. 50, 45 to the 30. Dare I say it? Say goodnight to it. 67 yards. Arch to the house.
I'd like to know where Lou Holtz is right now.
Oh, I win. Google me.
We're not hosting an intergalactic kegger down here.
Is he... he is he him. Arch Manning comes in for the injured Quinn Ewers, who has an oblique abdominal type injury that also affected his wrist somehow because he was flexing his wrist in a very Joe Burrow-like manner. Never seen somebody get hurt on a handoff, but it happened. And obviously it wasn't on the handoff. It was like, I'm going to try to stick it out. I'm going to hand this ball off. And then, ooh, that tugged a little bit. So
that was the wrist?
That was the oblique.
The oblique was on a throw, apparently.
Right.
Sark said yesterday that it was a throw that he threw and that he tried to gut it out and he couldn't, but that he actually injured it on a deep ball.
Yeah, but then I think he said, gut it out. And then on the handoff, right, you're extending, you kind of extend your core a little bit. It pulls. But yes, it did happen on the throw. So Arch comes in. Arch Manning came into this game 9 of 12, 223 yards.
Woo.
Four touchdowns, no picks, an average yards per attempt of 18.5, a QBR of a perfect 99.9.
Mm.
He also had three carries for 53 yards and a 17.5 average, including one for 67. Okay, so they count the sacks. In college, sacks count as a reduction of your rush yards. But you could not have asked for anything more from Arch Manning than the first time you saw him. Could not have asked for anything more. And because of that...
Did you get that extra boost of adrenaline as a Texas fan? You're like, here it is. This is the moment.
I was excited. I do think the box score looks a lot better than he actually played, though.
Whoa.
Like, when you look at it... Okay, so like one of them's like a quick screen that Isaiah Bond like ran 60 yards. One of the other, wide open, just easy toss to the middle of the field that was like a 70-yard touchdown. That was another one.
It's UTSA, put in perspective.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Whatever.
In terms of like, there wasn't, when he was asked to make like a throw in the face of pressure or whatever, those throws did not look good. Now he's young. I'm not saying anything like, well, he's going to be bad. He's going to be a bust now. But it's like the awareness of the pressure when it was coming and getting the ball out and making like a really impressive. I didn't see a whole bunch of like, whoa, what a throw right there. It was all stuff that was easy,
right.
Pitch and catch. And the throws that he did try to make that were a little bit tighter, one of them almost got picked.
Now, there are two avenues to take here. One is you're patient because you play Louisiana Monroe and then Mississippi State, both at home. You should have no trouble beating either one of them. Then you have a bye week, and then you play Oklahoma on October 12th.
Shouldn't have trouble beating them either.
And the way they're playing, so who knows? So you could be patient with Quinn and let him rest. The thing you're going to run into then is, like, you know, Arch is going to put up great numbers against Louisiana Monroe. Like, that's just the way it is, right? They're going to beat him up pretty badly, and probably the same thing for Mississippi State. And at that point, it's like, all right, are you going to go back? That's the question, because
it's not a question for me. You go back.
Oh, yeah. And I think Sark does go back.
Yeah.
But look, I think it's going into their careers, they were both the literally the highest graded
quarterbacks. And I wanted Arch as just a sports fan. I want Arch.
Yeah.
I want to see it.
Yeah.
I want to see if the hype is realized. You go back to Quinn Ewers.
But you know the chatter's going to happen.
Yeah.
The chatter's going to happen. Sark, I think he's got a handle enough on the program where he's not going to just be brash and make a snap decision based on the chatter. On orangebloods.com.
You're not going to make a snap decision in anything related to the Manning family, especially with what like Sark's done to make sure that that Arch ended up there. But I'll say this, is that when they were both perfectly graded prospects, like you mentioned, like the highest possible grade, in recruiting, most people obviously thought Arch was the next one. Like, I think Arch was still viewed as a better prospect than Quinn.
Higher ceiling.
In terms of higher ceiling, had a better shot. I think most people at Texas look at it now and say, not just now, Quinn will probably end up being the better quarterback at Texas.
Okay, so that's interesting because Arch has I don't believe Quinn has the ability to be the number one overall pick in the draft, right?
I don't. But I think
Arch does.
He's helping his stock a lot.
He is. He's a first round pick, no doubt. Arch probably does. So maybe the ceiling's higher, but I'm with you guys. I would absolutely go back to Quinn.
He's so athletic, Arches. That one run was longer than all of Peyton Manning's rushing yards over the last 10 years of his career combined.
he's a 4.5.
He is a really impressive athlete.
Should we ask Peyton what he thinks, or just keep him to Morton and Hammond and Brown in Lubbock with their quarterback situation?
Yeah, tell us what you think about Graham Harrell, Peyton.
Former Mean Green quarterback.
You know, actually, he probably loves this. The last time Texas was number one was when stupid Graham Harrell threw that touchdown pass to Michael Crabtree and beat Texas in Lubbock, and they haven't been number one since that day.
What would you do when Ewers is healthy?
You go back to Quinn, but I don't think you play him again till OU. Let Arch go out there. He's going to put monster numbers against UL Monroe. He's going to put monster numbers against Mississippi State. You let him play it out. But yeah, this is Quinn's team. Look, he was at Tuscaloosa last year, won that game. He was in the playoff in a Big 12 championship game. He's been there, done that. Let Quinn finish it out.
Paul Feinbaum on ESPN on Get Up was asked, does this do anything for Texas's title hopes if Arch is the quarterback for the rest of the way?
I don't think they really change. I think he is equal to Quinn Ewers in terms of what he can do. Now, the one thing he doesn't have is the experience. And what would be maybe even more remarkable is that the Heisman favorite at this moment in time gets replaced and doesn't get his job back. I think he will get his job back because that's the way Sark rolls in Austin. But I don't think it really matters who the quarterback is in Austin. They are a really outstanding team, and they'll probably be the number one team in the country by the end of this day.
And they were. They did leapfrog Georgia and became the number one team in the nation because Georgia struggled with Kentucky and they beat them 13-12 in a game in which Mark Stoops at midfield on 4th and 8 with 3 minutes to go decides to punt the ball back to Georgia. You ain't getting that ball back.
I upset the little minor gathering that I had that turned into a Canelo fight watch party that I was not trying to plan. But when you have the group together that I did, they're like, no, I got to see the fight. Got to see Canelo. I'm like, I just beat up on some bum again. And then while the prelims were breaking, I'm like, something is wrong with this Georgia score. Like, I don't understand what's happening. Georgia and Kentucky are close, y'all. So I kept changing it to Georgia and Kentucky until I saw the fourth down decision.
Yeah, and that was it's a terrible decision, and Mark Stoops won't take any kind of accountability for it. But that is what it is. So Texas jumps them. They're number one.
They punted.
As they should be, by the way.
They should be.
And I know I'll get the Texas homer angle from some people, but legitimately, given what Georgia did and how consistently Texas has been beating everybody down, Texas needs to be number one
right now. They absolutely deserve to be number one. I don't believe there's a question about it. So Texas 35 first place votes, Georgia 23, Ohio State 5. Bama's 4, Ole Miss 5, Tennessee and Missouri. So the SEC again, 6 of the first 7 in the AP poll.
By the way, one last thing on Arch. RG3 tweeted something that he's catching heat for. I'm trying to understand it. He tweeted, the black delegation has drafted Arch Manning. He was obviously making his reference to the legendary racial draft on the Chappelle Show. But I'm trying to figure this out. Explain this to me.
I don't know.
Explain why people are mad?
Or explain what? The tweet.
Oh, I think he's okay.
And yes.
I think what he's getting at is Arch is very athletic. I think that's what he's getting at with what he's saying.
Okay.
It's like when Michael Irvin, you were actually at ESPN when this happened. Michael Irvin got in trouble years ago on the Dan Patrick Show, where when Romo first got into the lineup and was really athletic, Michael made some comment about, well, you see, that athleticism makes me think one of his ancestors got in the barn with somebody. Yeah. And that got him suspended.
I remember that.
But it's a similar sort of, I think it's an athleticism.
He's basically saying that's a bad white boy.
Yeah, exactly. Get over it. It's nothing to freak out about.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah. Arch is up to seventh in the Heisman voting now, by the way.
In the odds?
Are you joking?
I'm not joking. So Quinn's off the board. Now, Quinn was like, he's off the board. You can't bet him right now at MGM or whatever. But Cam Ward's number one. Jackson Dart, Milroe. I am a believer. Gabriel, Carson Beck, Arch.
Where's DJ Uiagalelei?
He is not there.
Damn.
Daniel Jones, ukulele?
That list. Travis Hunter is. Travis Hunter is, and Travis was the kind of the jumping point here for Deion Sanders. Now, Braden Fowler Nicolosi is the quarterback for Colorado State. He went to Aledo. Okay, he's from here.
Oh.
All right. He is, so he moved here during COVID, I think, because they were from California or something. They moved here so he could play. And so he went to Aledo, and now he's the quarterback of Colorado State. Well, he goes over. He goes over to the sideline, kind of bumps into Travis, and does the too short. He puts his hand down, does the too short.
Yes.
And Deion, I don't know if Deion is self-aware or not, but he after this, I think it's obvious he not.
At the end of the first half, their quarterback ran out of bounds, bumped into Travis, told him he was too small.
How stupid is that? This is Travis Hunter. Dude, this is Travis Hunter. This is Travis Hunter. Like, who does that? I wouldn't allow my kids to do that. And y'all know that. And that ought to be said. But when you allow kids to sit in an interview and talk against us, and you just got beat by 50-something week one, come on, dog. Somebody help me here. Am I missing something? Straight up, tell me. I don't see where that's done in sports. That has to be allowed. Ain't nobody crazy enough to sit up there and say nothing like, hey, who does that?
All right, two things. Number one, no one hypocrites like Deion. My kids don't trash talk. We know what brand of watch your son wears when he held it up to every end zone last year.
That's not talking, though. That's just showing them something.
Yes. Know? Shador talked back to this quarterback in the post game. We know that they all talk nonstop. What Deion is right about is how crazy this interview was from the player.
So this is Fowler Nicolosi and then Torrey Horton, who were making this video about last year's game. Remember, last year's game went to overtime. It was a great game in Colorado. It's a fantastic game, great atmosphere, night game. This thing kept me up till about 1 a.m. But in this interview, man, these two Colorado State kids went after Colorado, and they got what they had coming to them in this game.
We owed them one. And that's just something that's been sitting on everybody, you know, mind since we came back from break. You know, we owe them. And we walked away from that game, you know, as you know, we kind of left it all on the field. I don't feel like we left it all on the field because we should have murdered them guys. And, you know, they came out with that attitude as they were on top of the world. And this ain't no Cinderella story, so we coming for revenge.
Yeah, they came out with that attitude and thought it was going to be a cakewalk. They saw the reports, 27.5 points or whatever it was. And they got a rude awakening real quick. And I think it goes to show that the hype, the media train, all that, it only gets you so far. At the end of the day, you have to line up 11 guys against our 11 guys, and we'll find out who wants it more, and we'll see how far Instagram followers gets them.
Damn! This is why.
Y'all know you lost the game,
this
right?
This is insanity, and the head coach, Deion, that was deserved with Deion calling out that head coach for allowing this to get out there.
Yeah, you lost last year. I know you shocked the world. You were in overtime, but you still lost.
Is this the game where Derek White got in a fight at? I posted this on
I had heard nothing about that. I saw that on your Instagram story. I was like, where the hell has this story been? Oh, my gosh.
It's like one of the Jokic brothers in the stands with Derek White.
You think Jason Tatum's going to get in a fight now?
So Colorado State wins 28-9. Two things real quick. One, if you haven't made a bet on UNLV to make the college football playoff, it might be too late to get some great value. They beat Kansas on the road. They're 3-0. They beat a Houston team by 20 on the road that went to OU the following week and lost to Oklahoma by just 2 points. And then finally, it shows where the state of A&M's program is, that Texas losing to A&M at home will get your coach fired. Now, he isn't fired officially yet. They're going to wait for the bye week. But Billy Napier, the Florida boosters, have come up with the money. They've put it into an account to get him out. And they want him gone after back-to-back 7-loss seasons and then now this.
I watched him in the post, and I was like, how did this guy sit down and blow everyone away as the leader and head coach of your program?
Douche.
I was listening to him, and I was like, what? This is the head coach of the Florida Gators?
He was like the hottest name in coaching 3 years ago, and now he'll be back at La Tech.
College Football Kegger with RJ Choppy. We're going to Ask Reddit at 7:40, Jerry Jones live at 8:30. And yes, Pepe has been spying on Filthy after the Monday night stunner against Atlanta. But every Tuesday, 7:20, we do post-game clarity. Bobby rewatched the disaster against the Saints. What position group was the worst? Was this superstar better than we thought? And does Mike Zimmer deserve all the blame that he's getting? Post-game clarity with our Cowboys insider Bobby Belt is next.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm John Aran, Pucks sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're commercial free. This is the Expressway. It is a Tolo Tuesday with Jerry Jones live at 8:30. Sean Sharif, RJ Choppy, Cowboys insider Bobby Roberto Belt will Ask Reddit at 7:40. But every Tuesday, Bobby rewatches the film, the tape. Of course, Love of the Star comes out every, two, 3 days? How many times are you guys doing it now?
I don't know. I mean, it's supposed to be three times a week, but it's a week. It's not consistent like when we're going to record it. Okay. Like, so it can change. It can be Monday, Thursday, Friday, or Monday, Tuesday, Thursday. It just depends.
Well, that is our promo for Love of the Star. Brought us, I tried. But Bobby went and rewatched the game for post-game clarity.
He won't have to worry much longer. All right, so, yeah, we do, and I guess I'm going to have to come up with a theme song for this of some sort for post-game clarity. But I did go back. I did go back and watch the game, and I always feel differently about something. Sometimes I can feel worse about some stuff. Sometimes I feel better about it, and sometimes it's not even always related to what I saw on tape. Sometimes it's just related to you get away from the fog of that initial, boy, this was bad, and you think about it in retrospect and go, all right, maybe that was a little, it wasn't nearly as bad as I thought. So number one on this list, you asked me for star downs yesterday, and I talked about how I went down the roster. My star downs should have focused exclusively on the team's defensive tackles. They were awful. Really bad. Jordan Phillips, Mozzie Smith, and especially Linval Joseph. Linval Joseph, the three of them did not look like NFL players in run defense. It was bad.
Okay, so when you're watching them and saying they shouldn't be in the NFL, what are you seeing? Are they just not, are they engaged with the defender? Are they not getting off a block? How are you seeing that? What are you seeing from a D-tackle?
Sometimes it varies on each snap what the problem is, but a lot of times it can be you ended up in the ground. You got blown off the ball. You didn't fill your gap right. You didn't get to your spot in time. The linebacker play was not great in this game. It's mostly due because the defensive tackles weren't keeping the linebackers clean. Like, the linebackers were having to take on blocks and then fill their gaps and do their responsibilities. It was a lot because the defensive tackles did nothing. On the first Kamara touchdown run, it was 7 yards. I'll show you during the break. When the ball is snapped, Jordan Phillips gets driven into the end zone all 7 yards within a second by Cesar Ruiz. No resistance.
Was Jordan Phillips, I'm not trying to call you out, Brian, was that the one Broadus was like pretty excited about and everyone said he's a better pass rusher than run stopper?
Broadus
was
Nikara
said that.
Yeah, Broadus was a fan of his. And Brian, when we were
more
recorded,
so maybe than who's the big D tackle they acquired?
Linval Joseph?
No, the other year. They got him.
Oh, Hankins. Jonathan Hankins.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and so Brian said,
and you had said no.
Brian apologized yesterday, actually, to the fans when we recorded Love of the Star, where he said, I thought Jordan Phillips was a better player than what he showed on tape. He's like, I don't know, maybe I watched the wrong games or something. He's like, but he was not a very good player. And so this was.
Yeah, I saw some people tweeting yesterday, Jordan Phillips should not be in the NFL.
I think it was John Owning said, it's a little bit poetic that the Cowboys acquired the one 330-pound defensive tackle who can't defend the run. Like, then that's Jordan Phillips, right? But Jordan Phillips, Linval Joseph, you can see why Mike Zimmer was trying to mix and match and like acquire people in August. Like, they clearly just cannot stop the run. And it was bad. And Mozzie Smith has to be better. Linval Joseph, for the PFF ratings, which I know Chop is a big fan of, all of them, all three of them were like 30 or less. Linval Joseph, Jordan Phillips, and Mozzie Smith. So that was awful. Good. That was absolutely terrible. Two, Micah Parsons was better than I thought. So he didn't light things up, but he was a lot better than I thought he was when I watched it live for the first time. So he was able to hold the edge well. He maintained his gap discipline for the most part, which is something that has at times been an issue for him. He won several pass rush reps. It wasn't as consistent or as dominant as it has been at times. But New Orleans deserves a ton of credit for recognizing we can't stop Micah all game straight up, even with our offensive line being really good. So we need to scheme around it a little bit, and we need to do some different things to try and take advantage of his aggressiveness and the way he likes to get upfield. And that they were able to manipulate all things. They were given chips. There was one play where Micah had did a spin, got free of the tackle, and didn't realize that there was going to be a running back waiting right there to then chip him off of the block. And so there were a lot of times. Brian had mentioned this too yesterday while we were recording, that there were a lot of different instances where you thought you had one-on-one because of the formation, the way that New Orleans was presenting the formation, and then at the snap, you realized, oh no, they're sending somebody to chip. And so it completely throws things off where Mike is expecting a certain thing or has a certain pass rush plan. But overall, I thought he was good. He was not great, but he was good, and it wasn't as bad as I had thought. New Orleans set up really good screens. They had quick throws, chip blocks, double teams, and Derek Carr deserves a lot of credit for his subtle movements in the pot, like just taking a step up or kind of sliding here. You see, like, that's a veteran quarterback who knows how to feel the rush and knows how to just make that one step that gives him the extra second.
Now, I heard a lot of people say the Saints, you know, successfully attacked the Cowboys' perimeter, edges, corners in the run game. What did you notice from the guys on the perimeter?
Yeah, I mean, the edge was not great at times. I thought Micah did a good job holding it for the most part, but there were a lot of different times where they just started running to the opposite side of the formation. I mean, there were times they'd run at Micah, but there were other times where it was clearly designed to just run away from his aggressiveness.
But, like, outside of Micah, like, corners, run support.
Yeah, secondary was not good in run support. The linebackers, because nothing was going right with the defensive tackles, linebackers weren't really able to make a lot of the plays that they want. Now, again, linebackers were not great, but they were kind of hindered.
And going back and watching it, can you understand more why Overshown got such few snaps? Does it make sense with what the Saints were doing or the matchup?
So Zimmer views it as there are two different personnel packages at linebacker. This is my understanding. Base personnel, 4-3, classic 4-3, which they were in two tight end sets a lot, so Zimmer felt like we have to be in base 4-3 a lot. That package is Maris Leofau, Damone Clark, Eric Kendricks. Nickel, when they go in there with five defensive backs, is Overshown and Kendricks. So for him, it's like, Overshown was playing as much as he would normally play, which is the nickel snaps. It's just we were in nickel less often. I think Overshown should be in the base personnel, personally. That's just the way I feel about
it.
Clark, probably.
Okay.
But, I mean, if you wanted it over Leofau, I wouldn't be upset. Kendricks has to be in there because Kendricks is just, he's putting everybody where they need to be.
On.
Yeah, and he's quick at diagnosing. Number three, Cooper Beebe was not very good in this game. And I was critical of Tyler Guyton on Monday, and I still feel like that was accurate. Guyton was better against the pass than he was in the run blocking. The pass protection wasn't nearly as bad, but Cooper Beebe had a lot more issues than I had thought watching it live.
There was something on the interior because Dak started getting pressured, and it looked like it was coming straight from the inside.
Zach Martin is I was.
Oh, don't say it.
I was kicking this around.
Don't say it.
I was kicking this around with Brian yesterday. Zach Martin looks mortal. He doesn't look bad, but he does not look, these first 2 weeks, there are definitely some reps that he's having trouble. Again, not like a bad player, a poorly graded player, but not the just impenetrable guy that he's been in the past. Beebe, I think the Saints worked him
really.
That's
a tough word to pronounce.
The Saints.
Impenetrable.
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 Unprecedented. The Saints worked him over pretty good in the run game in particular. He would get his hands on guys. Like they always say, beat the hands, beat the man. Like if you're the first one to get your hands on him, you generally will win the rep. That's like an old trope. But Beebe, it didn't matter. Trope. If he got his hands trope on him, they were able to just shed him. It didn't matter. Like, and so Beebe had a lot of issues sustaining his blocks. His pass protection was fine for the most part. The biggest issue right now is their communication is bad on the offensive line. Or not communication. These young guys, they don't have that feel for how to pick up twists and stunts and do different things. Guyton and Beebe, they've got to get more in sync with Tyler Smith and Zach Martin and Terrence Steele, because that's going to be the cause of a lot of their sacks, I would guess, for the first half of the season. Is you're going to see teams going, oh, we'll throw a twist here, or we'll just kind of throw an exotic blitz at you from, or an exotic pass rusher, some of these games from our defensive linemen, and they're not in sync. They don't have a feel for each other yet, and we're going to be able to take advantage of that. There was one in particular where Guyton picked up a block that you see Tyler Smith like stop and go like, oh, that was my guy. Okay, let me turn it over here. And rusher gets free and Dak has to throw it incomplete. I think that was a third down. But it was just, they've got to get better at that communication. That's the kind of stuff that why Adoga was still in the conversation, is because he's going to have a better feel for picking up those sort of things.
Post-game clarity during the commercial-free expressway on the home of the Cowboys with our insider, Bobby Bell.
Number four, Jalen Tolbert deserved a star up yesterday. I know I only gave it to Brandon Aubrey and Luke Schoonmaker, but Jalen Tolbert played a better game than I thought initially. His routes were clean. He wasn't perfect by any means. He had some issues.
He made the big adjustment on, I think, like the 39-yarder. That was a hell of a play.
And that's important. So that
it's important because it's like the only play.
But that what you saw there, like in the two, three years you've seen Jalen Tolbert, have you ever seen him make a play like that?
Seen him make a play.
That was all over his South Alabama tape, catches like that. That was the player he was at South Alabama.
Where Jaguars.
And he did it against current Saints corner and former Tennessee Volunteer, Alante Taylor. When he got a chance at South Alabama to play Tennessee, he went for like 7 and 160. And he made big catches, and he would talk trash. It is a completely different demeanor since he got to the NFL. And that's where you question confidence and where he's been. Seeing him make that play and get up and kind of bark a little bit also made me feel like, all right, maybe that player's still in there. Like, it hasn't been killed. Maybe he's growing back into that guy we saw on tape at South Alabama.
That was my favorite bet of the weekend, over 16 and a half pass yards.
For who?
Tolbert.
You bet it?
Mm-hmm.
My gosh.
Oh, receiving yards.
Receiving, yeah. Receiving
yards, you say passers. I was like, what a weird prop bet.
Yeah.
And then number five.
That's a degenerate pick.
That's a degenerate.
Number five, Clint Kubiak did get the better of Mike Zimmer.
And to that point, maybe you're looking right early on. Bobby and I think are taking lowercase L's right now. You probably bet on Tolbert because you question whether Brandon Cooks was a legitimate number two. And I heard KNC, they mentioned it yesterday, and it got me thinking about it more and more on the way home. Right now, it's looking like Brandon Cooks is not a legitimate two, and that you are almost screwed if Ferguson's out.
You are, yeah. It didn't play into it. I just thought it was a low number.
Oh,
right?
Never mind. I take back all the credit I tried to give you.
I don't want to take the credit I didn't deserve. Although I appreciate it. I just thought that, like, you know, 16 and a half too low for number three. That he was. I mean, he
well, forget about that. More about Cooks.
Look, it's not been a good start for him. Now, he had the touchdown pass catch in the first game on a play, though, that was largely Dak Prescott's doing. You know, the blitz comes, he recognizes it. The numbers showed that over the last 2 years, he had dropped off a little bit in yards per play or yards per route run, whatever that wide receiver stat is. But I also think that could be sometimes flawed in what they ask
targets.
You to do.
It's about targets. Progression and everything. And
he's got six catches on 9 targets so far this year for 59 yards.
Is he not getting open? Is that the problem?
And I mean, the Cleveland tape, I noticed him getting open. I didn't see him as much in this game. It wasn't as much of a focus when I went back and watched it. But he got open a lot last year, and he just was never part of the progression. I felt like last year was just about where he was in the pecking order.
How are you not part of the progression as the number two receiver?
No, in terms of, like, just CD's volume was so high, it's like you didn't get to that part of the progression a lot, to where it was just he beat his guy, but the ball went to CD. Clint Kubiak was better than Mike Zimmer, and this was something that when we were talking about it yesterday, just I wasn't sure. Like, I didn't know what to think about Zimmer. I definitely thought the players held a big responsibility, and so I needed to see, all right, where were some of the issues? Watching it back, the defense was absolutely terrible, but you can see that Kubiak definitely won the chess match. He had the schematic upper hand the entire day, so he was able to design around Parsons. He had some really clean route concepts. Zimmer didn't do a great job of countering it with coverages. It felt like, and to be fair, I think Kubiak had a slight advantage in terms of when you're talking about who knows the other one better. Kubiak knows Zimmer better than Zim is going to know Clint Kubiak, because Kubiak coached for 3 years on the offensive side of the ball in Minnesota, saw Zimmer's stuff every day in practice, heard a lot of what Zimmer's philosophy was. Kubiak since then has developed different concepts and stuff like that. Not that Zimmer is stuck in his ways, but Zimmer's been around for 30 years. He has certain things that he thinks work more effectively than others, whereas Kubiak's probably evolved a little bit. But players have to be better. But I think Zimmer did say this yesterday. I think Zimmer told you he's got to be better. Like, he definitely lost. He lost the chess match in this game.
Speaking of the chess match, we have to ask Jerry Jones about this Shanahan kryptonite. What we talked about yesterday with the coaching tree, Dan Orlovsky on ESPN. These are good. These are two good clips. They just are. You know, I'm balanced AF. I give it up when people deserve props, even people who I hate. And I'm not saying I hate Dan. There's other people I hate. I still give props to in the Metroplex. This is Orlovsky talking about that scheme, that system, kryptonite.
Not surprising at all. The Cowboys are an average football team. And I've said that all offseason. They're an average football team. And if you paid attention to this style of offense, Shannon, who's the offensive coordinator? Do you know for the New Orleans Saints? Do you know his name by any chance?
I do not.
Clint Kubiak, the son of a guy that you played.
Oh.
Exactly.
Gary Kubiak.
Gary Kubiak's son. The offense that you played in for such a long time. That offense is the same offense that the Packers run. It's the same one as the San Francisco 49ers run. It's the same as the Detroit Lions run. It's the same as the Los Angeles Rams run. It's the same as the Green Bay Packers. Everybody in the NFC runs this. The Cowboys have always struggled over the past couple years with this offense. That's why I said last week on Thursday, I wanted to watch this team play against this offense. When it comes to misdirection, when it comes to motion, when it comes to play action pass, when it comes to cut split receivers, Shannon, everything you know about this offense, the Cowboys defense struggles with it. The spine of their defense struggles with handling all this. I'm not shocked by this at all.
Wow.
So that's all the teams that run the same scheme. And then, and we have a segment on this moving forward, what does trouble look like? And is there trouble with the Cowboys' future schedule? Dan went down it.
I'm not surprised by this. And candidly, this has got to be concerning to the Cowboys because three of the five teams that they play in over the next 5 weeks in their schedule, they run this offense in some shape, way, shape, or form. The Pittsburgh Steelers run game, it's the same one that they're going to see. The Detroit Lions and San Francisco 49ers, it's the foundation of who they are. So offensively, they struggled. Dak had missed throws. And defensively, until I see this team stop this very specific scheme, I don't believe in them.
Wow. And now the word that's kind of scaring me that I'm continuing to think about is matchup. How are they going to match up? Maybe it's not as talented of a team. Maybe it's not as good of a team. How are they going to match up against what Orlovsky's talking about with this offense? Everyone's copycatting.
Well, to be fair, and he's right, but like, you know, he mentioned Detroit. You know, they played Detroit last year and they beat them.
Yeah, barely. Yeah. And arguably shouldn't have.
Arguably shouldn't have, but they only allowed 20 points. You know, like, it's not like they got, it was a 38-37 game.
We all would have picked Detroit, though, if they would have gone up against Detroit in that playoff.
And you
run,
picked probably. One game.
Yeah, it's true.
Look at the rest of the
Green
teams.
Green Bay, they got worked.
Smoked. San Fran, they always get smoked.
Yep. They handle the Rams, but.
They handle the Rams, true.
So, Todd Archer, and I knew this was coming up, but Todd wrote a story this morning that he has out. The headline is, Cowboys defense still can't slow Shanahan coaching disciples. And he says the last name Shanahan has become a four-letter word around the star in Frisco. And he points out that he says over the last 9 games that they've faced the Shanahan coaching tree, Shanahan or his disciples, they're 2-7. And in only one of those 7 losses did they hold the opposing team under 100 yards rushing. It's when the Dolphins rushed for like 97. But you look at the...
Yeah, Miami didn't go off on them last year either.
No, they didn't. Miami won that game, right?
Miami won.
Yeah,
but they didn't go off.
Right.
But like you look at San Francisco...
Didn't Lipke have a fumble at the?
I blame Pollard for not getting in.
Lipke had a fumble. Edoga had a missed block that blew up a red zone.
But the point is, Miami's offense did not explode and torch them. I don't remember.
Yeah, and one of the things that you look at here is, you know, Shanahan over the 3 games that they've played recently, 460 rushing yards. They've got 3 more Shanahan disciples on their schedule coming up. Atlanta, Houston, and Cincy are all from that Shanahan coaching tree.
A little pop quiz for RJ Choppy. It'll go with the shirt that you're wearing today as well. Mike Zimmer yesterday said, my first game here as a coordinator was the pickle juice game. What game is that, Ralph?
That was the Jason Witten game. Was that, what do you mean?
You're just associating pickle juice with Jason?
Yeah, because he used to do the pickle juice commercials. He would drink the pickle juice.
It was not the pickle juice game. The pickle juice game was the opener against Philly.
For the Witten pickle juice.
In what year?
That would have been, it was Joey Galloway's first game. It was 2000.
Machota wrote this. First game here as a coordinator was the pickle juice game. Cowboys lost 41-14 to the Eagles in 2000.
Yeah, so Zimmer was the defensive coordinator for that game. That was the onside kick to start, and that was famous because at halftime, Andy Reid got up there. It was 110 degrees on the field, and they asked, I think it was Pam Oliver's, like, how are you guys staying hydrated? And he said, I had them all drinking pickle juice this week, and it became this big storyline.
And then Zimmer said, I vowed to fix it after that. If I didn't fix those, I wouldn't be standing here today. The Cowboys never had a practice look the way that they played against the Saints on Sunday. Quote, these guys are typically on point and do everything the right way. So he's referencing, I can hear Jerry now, 1 hour from now. Guys, Zimmer was part of a thing called the pickle juice game.
Yeah.
I can hear him. I can hear him coming up at 8:30 this morning. So there we go with a little post-game clarity. No one does it better, in my opinion, than DFW Sports Station commercial-free expressway. The home of Brian Broaddus' favorite segment is Ask Reddit.
Do you have a question, Kelly?
Yeah, I have a lot of questions. Number one, how dare you?
That's right. It's Tuesday, so it's time for Ask Reddit. 877-881-1053. 877-881-1053. Get your answers in on the Frankel & Frankel Injury Attorneys fan text. And you will also get your answers over on the Twitch and the YouTube.
I'm going to preface this. I did not like any of these questions. I was not a fan. I was going to stretch inside the star here to the end of it because I was not a fan of these.
Why is that? Why you weren't? You don't think you have good answers for them? These are just what went viral.
Yeah, I know. We gotta do it. That's what the people want.
Let's lead off. I should lead off with you, Sean.
Do it.
No. I'm gonna lead off with Choppy here because I always throw it over to Peyton. Choppy, what do you regret not appreciating more when you were younger?
Time.
The passage of time.
Yeah. So time moves slower in youth and adulthood. Routine. It's like there's studies that. Nostalgia moves slower than routine. That's why when you're a kid, it seems like it takes forever to get through the week. But when you're an adult, you blink and it's 4 years down the road because you go into a routine.
Yeah.
I think that I also didn't appreciate the process of things as a kid. I was like just results based. that's why you don't practice golf. That's why you don't practice this. That's why you don't take time to do that. And you get down, you get too high, too low. But I would say time.
I remember it was around 2013 that I kind of had an epiphany that the thing I regretted not appreciating, not nearly as serious as something like time or life and it's
real deep.
You know, yeah. I didn't like Kobe was a good example for me of like don't just like hate somebody because they're great. Like I grew up, I couldn't stand the Lakers because Kobe was great and they were kicking everybody's ass and I hated the Kobe Shaq Lakers. And I realized by the end of his career, I was like, man, I wasted a good opportunity to just like watch somebody who was fantastic and like be able to just appreciate how great he was and just enjoy how awesome he was at the sport.
That's
I kind of blew that.
That's why I root for dynasties because I do try to tell myself, yo, man, I'm watching something that is special in all time, whether it's Tiger, whether it's Brady, whether it's Floyd, whether it's Michael, whether it's LeBron. I don't have a great answer for this because I number one, had a good childhood.
Very privileged.
Very, very, very privileged. But I try to be reflective more than most. Like, I think I probably am bad about slowing down now. Like, oh, if we do well with a show, we do well with this, we have a good interview. I'm always like creating a problem now in my head of if someone's like, hey, how's work going? Yeah, but I didn't really have that. Back then, I appreciated my parents' work ethic, the lessons. I know I was being taught well. I know I was fortunate with the upbringing that I had. So I don't feel like I rejected things younger or took them for granted. But now I'm just like, all right, well, what's the next issue? What's the next problem? What's the next project versus just sitting back and enjoying?
214
in my Amber custom pool.
214, the lack of cell phones. 940, how much my parents work to provide for us. Peyton, what's your answer here?
So I went a different route with this one. Mine's having meals at home when I lived with my parents. Always having food there.
That just ended like 2 years ago.
Yeah, no, literally.
Well, so when I was younger, because like, so what I was going to say is when I turned 16, I had a license. I was always eating out. I was always hanging out with friends, you know, going to eat out with, you know, before and after school. So like I was spending a buttload of money when I had food at home. And, you know, my parents were cooking meals, you know, 5-6 days a week. Yeah. And I was like, no, I don't want to eat meatloaf again tonight. I'm going to go have Whataburger. I was spending so much money. If I found out the amount of money I spent from, you know, just 16 to 18 before college, I would be in tears.
Did you have a job?
Yes, I did.
Well, what were you doing?
I cleaned and delivered bounce houses to places in DFW. Oh, wow, and I also was an umpire.
All right, look at you, Peyton.
I thought you were going to say that you neglected or didn't appreciate your parents' food at home because now you're food prep or you're having to cook all the time. Can't just go downstairs and enjoy the family dinner.
Yeah.
Right. And I still cook to this day, you know, like you said. So my parents' food was great. Oil. Yeah.
A lot of people are saying the Frankel Injury Attorneys fan text, naps.
I still get those.
Me too.
My parents not paying bills, booty. That's one. I think that you don't get. That's when you reach the sign of adulthood.
Yeah. We are doing Ask Reddit here on 105 through the Fan. Getting your answers on the Frankel & Frankel Injury Attorneys fan text and on the fan cam over at Twitch and YouTube. Sean Sharif, this one is made for you. Out of all of them, I would think you would have wanted this one. What is something people consider bad parenting that you think is actually good parenting?
Ooh, oh, wow. This is a great one.
I don't think you're going to want to say it to Mike. I loved your parenting tactic that you told me about after leaving the party the other day.
After leaving the party. Which party?
When you were coming back with Ava and telling her how good she did.
Oh no, I'll say that. So my wife doesn't love a lot of these.
This is mental warfare with a toddler.
Yeah.
I will parent my son like through my daughter. So like, I know my daughter at 4 months, she can't understand what I'm saying.
Right.
So when I want to get a certain point across to my son and compliment him, I'll be like, Ava, bad. Like, you're bad. Like, sure. Ollie does this, Ollie does that. You don't do it. You're bad. I'm not harming her. I'm not screaming at her. And my son, like, his light goes off. Like, yeah, I'm doing well. Well, he was bad. Oh, my God. Taking him to a birthday party it's awful. He's terrible. He doesn't want to eat the pizza. He doesn't eat pizza. He won't sit down. He won't cooperate. He just wants to go do his own thing. But he doesn't sit down like the rest of the kids. And I did the opposite the other day. Like, I had every grandparent listening is going to be so pissed at me. But I'm just like, you're so good, Ava. Like, you're not a bad child. Like, you know how to behave in public. You know what you're doing. You know, and it worked. It worked on Ollie.
Oh, no.
He's like, I'm bad. He went to mom. And then I had to, like, bring him back in, you know. So I'm like the bad cop and the good cop.
All in one.
Yeah. But I believe in the leashes now.
Oh, my God.
I support you parents with the leashes out in public. Tie them up. Attach it, connect it, do what you got to do. So three of them, but it's got to be a three kid minimum. You can't do it with two.
No.
Can't do it with two. You need the leashes in public to keep them all around and keep them from scurrying off. You go ahead and you rope them up.
You got a leash.
Yep.
No surprise, the over like whelming answer on the fan text here, spanking is the common answer here. You know what? For me, this is. And usually it's not, I don't think other parents think this is bad parenting. It's people who don't have kids. Is you can let them cry. There's sometimes you can just let them cry.
My wife is finally coming around to it, baby.
Like it's like Hootie and the Blowfish. Let her cry. Yep. If she's gonna go, just let her go. Chop, what's your answer for this?
I'm a big proponent of failure. I love failure. I think failure's great. I want them to succeed ultimately, but like I think a lot of parents like just try to like prevent their kids from failing.
Your kids need to lose by 25 points to the Saints sometimes. You need
they
that.
Do. They need to, like, I think they need, I don't think you can truly, like, know what success is until you fail. Failed.
English.
So, like, I think they need to realize they can fail first and then prosper. So, I mean, I don't want them, like, if it's like, you know, if I find out that my kid is doing eight balls here, you know, then, all right. Put a stop to that. But for the most part, it's like, let him go. See where he takes this.
Learn.
See where he takes this. And then,
that's good.
You know, when it gets to the point where, okay, now we're getting into damage here. Now you step in, but let him fail.
Twello Vader over on the Twitch agrees with Sean. Child leashes. Something that he's now in favor of. Peyton, as somebody who doesn't have kids yet, I mean, what, you're 8 months away, whatever it is?
I would never do it, by the way. I would never do the leashes. I don't want to be judged, but yeah, I support you doing it. I'm not going to look down upon you.
As somebody who doesn't have kids, I'm curious, where do you fall down on something that you think, I think that's perfectly fine, and y'all seem to think as parents that that's bad?
You know, obviously, as a kid, I didn't agree with it because I got my ass whooped a lot by my dad, but spanking and discipline was one for me. You know, woke me up, kind of got me straight, and I think it's a perfect tactic. I have no problem with it.
All right, we're doing Ask Reddit here.
That is a good one.
Yeah.
Ask Reddit here on 105 through the Fan. You can shoot your answers over at 877-881-1053. Peyton Russell, what's something illegal you do on a regular basis?
All of mine are driving violations. In the middle of the night, when I'm driving in at 3:45, 4 o'clock in the morning, I don't think a red light should be necessary to stop at. it should be blinking red the whole time. I do not have to stop because all these lights in Rockwell and in Dallas, they're all cycles. They're not sensors. So it's like I'm sitting there with no one going in any direction for 2 or 3 minutes. I'm like, guys, I should just be able to, in my righteous mind, I should just be able to make the decision to make the turn if I want to. So it's all driving violations.
Over on the YouTube, Seidel San Antonio 210 says, big facts, Pepe. And David Sullivan just posted some emojis. I don't know what it means. It's a tree, it's a flame, and then some smoke. I don't know what that means. I
can't imagine what that would be.
No clue. Choppy, what's something you do that's on a regular basis that's illegal?
I think the tree and the flame and the smoke. Gamble. It's illegal in Texas to sports gamble. Punishable by a $500 fine each offense.
Is it illegal to even, I'm curious, I guess I don't understand this. Is it illegal to do it on like some of these websites like Bovada and other things where you have access to it?
Here's the thing. It's, I don't collect. I don't cash out.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's technically illegal because I'm not cashing anything out.
Is that really the rule?
It's like, you can't,
there's no way you can place a wager on a game and if you don't cash out, it's not illegal.
I mean, you haven't done anything wrong at the moment.
I thought placing the wager was wrong.
I think it's the collection of the money.
I don't even know why. How is it? I just don't understand how the website's accessible to be able to do it.
Honestly, I have no idea either. I have no idea how it's even accessible for me to do this. It's on some offshore account. But
I've never done the speed limit.
China.
I don't think I've ever done the speed limit. I think I'm consistently 10 to 15 miles per hour over, no matter where it is. And I've also never, not consistently anyway, used a crosswalk. I'm just going to cross wherever I see the most sensible thing. But those are probably the two big ones for me. Sean, what law do you break on a regular basis?
I'm probably the goody-goody on the show. I don't want to go through the effort of a ticket. I'd rather, my conservative wife is probably not political. She's probably playing a role in this. My blinkers are both out.
Oh, no.
My blinkers, so...
Nobody's business where you're going anyway.
Every left-hand turn, every right-hand turn I make now, I'm breaking the law probably because I haven't got my blinkers replaced. Tolo, Mike, Osmond, I need you.
Aren't you supposed to do the stick your hand out the window and do one of those or whatever?
That's right.
Yeah.
You're probably watering your lawn too much. That's what it is.
Yeah, with the $600 water bill.
No, it's I water twice a week. That's it.
How long did your inspection go that one time? How far over were you? Eight wasn't like years. A year or two
inspection
years?
Inspection of what?
Your car inspection.
Oh, four.
Yeah,
it was 4 years.
That's impressive.
4 years.
The registration of these. I don't know how that sticker. I don't know how they didn't pull you over with that sticker.
Who's reading the sticker?
I.
Who won't read the sticker? Who won't wear the ribbon? All right, ask Reddit. Who knows the reference? Text it in 877-881-1053. You asked for it. PayPay delivered. Did you stay up for the misery and filthy? We have been spying on Eagles Radio. We'll play it for you. Then Jerry Jones at 8:30 next.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.